Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
A species needs sex to survive, but we really don't need sex to survive. But we definitely need sex to thrive.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is sex, love, marriage, and divorce. It's complicated. I am Susan Guthrie.
And I'm Rebecca Zung. And today we are so excited to have another amazing guest for you, author and marriage sex therapist, Todd Krieger. Todd is a marriage and sex therapist with a private practice in California who helps couples create loving and passionate long-term relationships and helps single people find their soulmate. He is the author of The Long Hot Marriage, a highly regarded and endorsed book for couples, and also the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Love, Sex, and Karaoke, 52 Ways to Ignite Your Love Life. Todd also has created two aids to help individuals and couples to heal from infidelity, his ebook, The Little Black Book of Infidelity, and his online program, The Infidelity Cure. In addition, Todd has a powerful and dynamic downloadable online program called Divorce Proof Your Marriage, available through his website, which is toddkrieger.com, toddkrieger.com. Todd has been a guest as a relationship expert on many radio and TV shows, including the Fox Morning News, KCAL 9 in LA, Playboy Radio, and was a featured therapist on the show Unfaithful on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And so we are so delighted to have you here today. Welcome, Todd.
It's nice to be here with you both.
Yeah, Todd, I have to tell you, Rebecca and I have been quite excited about this taping. Having you on today and the topic of, you know, sex and marriage is such a complicated one, there's so many permutations to relationships and around that sex question. Honestly, as divorce attorneys, we really only ever come in at the end of the road. You know, we only see our clients when they come to us and they're ready to end the relationship and the marriage. And we know there's a lot more to that story. One of the things that has surprised both of us over the years is how often our clients come in to speak with us, and among all of the many, you know, tales they tell us about their sex lives, one of the things often that we hear is that they have not been intimate with their partner for years. I've had cases, I had one just recently where they both mentioned it had been 7 years since they knew how long it had been, but it was 7 years. So I was thinking maybe that's a good place to start. How does that happen? How does a marriage go for 7 years or a long term like that without a sexual relationship?
You know, Susan, you mentioned this 7 year thing. In my book, The Long Hat Marriage, there's a section in there called the 7 year no touch couple or something like that, where they didn't just have intimacy at all, no intimacy for 7 years, but they didn't touch. I mean, they didn't even link pinkies for 7 years. So the question is, how does that happen? And it really comes down to one word: fear. You know, as a professor at USC, I teach neurobiology, and I know we are wired to survive. So for example, the way I look at all relationship issues, I look for what they're protecting themselves from. So you have a couple, they fall in love, they're all sexy with each other, they get together, it's all great. It's wonderful. They don't have a problem. I mean, there are those exceptions where it starts out not that sexy, but for most of us, it starts out pretty sexy. And then what happens? Literally, the neurochemistry changes, number one. But at the same time, our old attachment wounds get cut up, and there's ways to protect ourselves. Some people protect themselves by getting louder and fighting. Some close down and withdraw. And so you can have kids and you have financial challenges. And what happens is they suddenly are on survival mode all the time with each other. And when you're on survival mode, you're not thinking sex. If you're hanging from a cliff, you're not thinking about sex. And people's bodies are acting that way for years and sometimes decades. So I think that's why it ends up being like that.
So we've also seen situations where there would be maybe what we might call incompatible libidos, where one party really wants it, the other party doesn't, or maybe the one party wants it more and the other party doesn't. But just keeping, and I want to ask more about that, but just keeping with our theme of the couples who've had no sex, what would you advise or what do you say to these couples who one party wants it still? And the other party has decided they don't. And, well, you know, they still maybe want to stay married. They just don't want to be in a marriage that's not, that with no sex.
That's a great question. And I know one of the driving forces, I knew we were going to talk about this. The thing that happens with these people that don't want sex is they have turned off their sex. And again, they're living in comfort in that area. And, you know, the truth is, need sex to survive, but we really don't need sex to survive. We definitely need sex to thrive. At least most of us do, I should say. And so my job is to help the person realize that, I mean, there are people that I guess you'd say are asexual, but that's really a small, small percentage. Most people that are comfortable with no sex, they're living in that survival mode. My job is to help them reconnect. My job is to help them open up. If it's the woman, typically the woman that is closed down, she's not just closed down her vagina, I should say it like that, but has closed down her heart on some level. And so it's up to the couple with my assistance to help him tune into her, to help him begin to make her feel emotionally safe again, or maybe for the first time. And most of the time, as she becomes more emotionally safe, and we help her realize the mindset. It's a big question, so I'm just trying to cover everything in a short time. The other thing
take your time, because I think this is a really important topic, and I think this is lots of people are going to be interested in. So take all the time you need to answer it as well as you can.
Right, you're right. So a lot of times what I'll see with the women, I'll just talk about the women that I've closed down, is they – not only they may not feel emotionally safe, but the other thing is sex in their mind is about the husband or the boyfriend, the long-term male partner. It's really, they don't have the mindset of, wow, what can I enjoy out of this? And so their mindset is more like a chore. So who wants one more chore? She always has plenty of chores, right? She's got kids to take care of. Maybe
dishes.
She's working. Dishes to do. And now sex, another chore, right? So the thing that we want to do, rather than to get the man in this case, believe me, it goes both ways and we'll talk about it. But in this case, the man, instead of getting him to settle and accept no sex, I help the woman reclaim what's rightfully hers, which is her own sexuality, and help her begin to ask questions like, what do I want? I've had women ask the question, I say, what do you want? And they'll go, I've never asked that question of me in my life. Ever, not even once. Especially if they came from families, let's say, where there was molest or they weren't taught even emotionally to be what I call healthily selfish. So they're givers, but they're not good at receiving. And if I switch over to the man, a lot of times it could be similar though. I've had a lot of men that they don't know how to be healthily selfish either, and then sex becomes just one big performance. My job is to be the man and to perform and to make her satisfied, and sex becomes this chore, maybe not so much a chore, but another place they could fail. So we look at those kinds of things, like what stops? What's the benefit out of not having sex? What is it protecting you from? What is it? Was it protecting from being vulnerable, protecting from failure? And then we address those issues, and oftentimes we could then resurrect that one partner's or both partners' low sexual desire.
So I've said for years, long before, you know, we met and long before I started this podcast with Susan, but having been a divorce attorney for 20 years, I've said my observation is that if a woman decides that she's not giving a man sex, he will maybe tolerate for a certain period of time, but he's going to go find it somewhere else. I mean, and so is it okay to take care of the urge elsewhere and just say, okay, but the rest of my life I like, and you know, what do you say to couples like that? What if the woman won't even come into therapy?
No, this is real life. I mean, we want to legitimize the man's need for touch and for sex and for arousal and for orgasm and all that good stuff. I mean, it's all good stuff. What I always try to do first is try to see what's missing in the woman. But let's say, like you say, the woman refuses to come into therapy. Then I say to him, well, just tell her. I mean, I'm a believer in ultimatums. I think ultimatums sometimes are necessary. So I, rather than have a secret, I think secrets are just bad for both the person who's betraying and the person who's betrayed. So I would just honor my, and also secrets lead to shame. So it's like I'm doing this bad thing. But I would say in this particular case, if all else fails and she's refusing to participate in therapy, get help, she just says, I'm not going to do it. You just got to live with it. Then he needs to tell her, look, I'm not willing to live with it that way. My first choice would be to have sex and work on our life together, intimate wise. But, you know, since you're not interested in that, I am going to give myself permission to have sex with other women. I hope you're okay with that. Because my needs are legitimate. And like I said, that's really second choice, but you're giving me very poor choices here.
See a lot of times is, you know, they do that. And then the women are like absolutely highly offended that the husband went and did that. They want them to stay living like the monk, I think. I mean,
Yeah.
We always hear often when our clients come in and there's been infidelity, and certainly that's probably the number one thing we hear in our office is that there's infidelity on one or the both sides. Often the person who has strayed from the marriage will say that it was because they weren't getting sex in their marriage. So we know that's a really prevalent thing, but is infidelity like the death knell for marriage? I mean, does it mean that the marriage is over if someone does stray?
Well, you know, one of the things, I have two main specialties, and one is low sexual, how to increase sexual desire and rekindle passion. And the second is healing from infidelity. And sometimes they go hand in hand, right? So as a person who helps people heal from infidelity, I boldly state that I have a 90% success rate with couples that have infidelity. And what I mean by success rate, it's not just they survive the marriage, but they actually thrive. I am not at all saying infidelity is a good thing. It's actually a bad thing. It's very hurtful. And I think that a lot of these people, men or women that have sex with other people because there's not enough sex in the marriage, well, if I was there earlier, I'd say, well, did you tell the person? Like I said to Rebecca just a few minutes ago, that I would rather the person say, look, this is what I'm going to do. I don't want to, but I'm going to do it. Like, here I am. I honor my sexual needs. I honor who I am. And this is what I want to do if you give me no choice. I'd much rather work on it with you. That's a better way to go. However, if they have infidelity and it's rampant, as we know, then yes, there's ways to heal from infidelity. Because to me, and you even said, like, there's always reasons why there's infidelity. So I don't make excuses. I think infidelity is painful and not a great choice, but it's a symptom of it's a problem, but it's not the problem. The problem is usually there's not enough sex, or, you know, I've come up with many different factors, like 10 actually, why people will cheat. And that's all on my website. That's a whole other podcast for that. But basically,
you want to give us a couple of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most common I see from men, it's affirmation. They have been affirmed that they're a great guy in the beginning of the relationship, and now that all stops. He goes to work, let's say, his secretary, or if it's a doctor, his nurse, I'm just thinking of some of my couples I'm seeing now, they just think, oh, you're so great. Oh, I love the way you do your job. Oh, and you know, you're so handsome. I mean, it just takes a few compliments, and they go, oh my God, I've been longing for that. And a lot of times that's one of the reasons. That's the first step. It doesn't start with sex. It starts with the need for affirmation. I think another one is fear of abandonment, and they sabotage the relationship. They'll say, I'll sabotage this relationship before you leave me. And typically those people have had a lot of abandonment in their past. I've seen some men that had very needy, controlling mothers look at marriage. They project the same stuff onto their wives and they feel restricted. So it's a way to have freedom. So those are three of the 10 that I see most commonly. And you try to understand what it is. And then of course, they could be lonely, that's 4. And missing connection, physical and emotional connection. We need to understand what the message is of the infidelity so that we could address the problem rather than get so focused on the infidelity. And I know some partners would say, no way, my wife's one of them. You cheat on me. I know that's what you do for a living. You'll be happy. I won't decapitate you. I probably won't do that, but I will divorce you. That's my wife's statement. But I say, well, you haven't been there, so you don't know. And I've tried to make sure that you're not there. But the truth is, it's not the problem. And people can heal. And a lot of times, it's a wake-up call for people on the verge of divorce. And a lot of times, well, when there's infidelity, most couples are on the verge of divorce. And yet it's that opportunity sometimes to awaken and get out of this slumber.
Coming up, more from Susan, Rebecca, and Todd on sex, love, marriage, and divorce. It's complicated.
I would love to have sex with another woman. I got to tell you right now, I would love to have sex with another woman.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including co-parenting with a toxic ex with Dr. Amy Baker.
Allowing the child to choose whether or not to go to parenting time. I mean, parents don't allow their kids in general. They don't allow them to choose whether to go to school or not because they value education. They wouldn't allow the child to choose whether to wear a seatbelt. So the kids know when a parent allows a child to choose, the parent is saying, this isn't that important. It's not, it's discretionary. You could take it or leave it. So it's conveying a very powerful message that they don't value that other, the child's relationship with that other parent.
And now we return to today's show.
So, in pretty much every radio and television interview I've ever done, I've stated that my theory is there's the three A's, the three deadly sins of marriage, which I call abuse, addiction, and adultery. Mm. And so for me, I always say that those are the deadly sins because they're almost impossible to overcome unless both spouses really, really want to.
Right.
And so, but you have this idea that infidelity might actually be able to save a marriage. And could you tell us about that?
Well, again, I have to always put the disclaimer. I'm not saying infidelity is good. I call it an interpersonal crime because it steals from the betrayed person the opportunity to make decisions based on the truth. But once there's better ways to achieve what people get from successful treatment with infidelity with someone such as me. But yes, a lot of times when at the point of discovery of the affair, the relationship already is not in good shape. It's already, the romance has been gone. The intimacy is shaky at best. They don't have a good, healthy fight style. There's a lot that goes on there. They're not communicating openly. So what will happen is the infidelity throws the relationship into crisis, and you know, in the Chinese language, crisis is made up of two characters, and a lot of people know this, but the one on the left is danger, and the one on the right means opportunity. So it's like that with infidelity. It's a danger. It's like, are we going to make it? Could we ever heal? You know, and a lot of people are going, I didn't know who you were. I thought you were this, but now I thought I was married to someone faithful. And there's a whole lot of identity discovery that has to go on, usually for both people. But when but they're alive, and they are, if they are connected emotionally, they don't want to lose each other. So the fear of loss wakes them up, and it could resurrect the relationship. And then they start to realize, wow, I've taken you for granted. And after the infidelity, I've seen sex lives dramatically improve sometimes. I've seen people, I'm not going to take you for granted. Intimate relationships is not a free ride. You know, we have this idea, we go to work, we're on our best, we bring out our best, we take risks. Then we go home, and a lot of people, you know, drink beer and put on the remote control and think that's a relationship. We got to get out of our comfort zones, even in our intimacy. And it helps them recognize the need for adventurers and risking and all that stuff that made it juicy in the beginning. So that's what infidelity could do.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah. I mean, but as you say, there are probably easier ways to connect with each other than that, right?
Well, they could talk.
Maybe go to somebody like you beforehand, yes, they decide to stray.
Yeah.
I love when these couples come for premarital counseling, or they've been married only 5 months, but they're starting to see problems just begin to bubble up. I mean, that's the best way to go. But for most of us, we wait until the problem is huge.
The fire's burning, right?
The fire is burning. Where's the extinguisher?
Yeah, you're the extinguisher.
Yeah.
This brings to mind a different type of infidelity that I've had a few cases with, where it wasn't that one of the partners went out and cheated with another person, but they became, I'm just going to call it, addicted to porn, where they were either on their computer or in some fashion watching porn. The descriptions that I've heard are where it's become really a part of their daily habit. So yes, can you be addicted to porn, and what happens there?
You definitely could be addicted to porn. The studies show, they could do brain studies, and they show with porn that the dopamine release is the same as other drugs, you know, like cocaine and crystal meth. And, you know, so you can definitely be addicted to that feeling, that dopamine release. And so it's a major problem. You know, one is the addiction that ends up being a substitute for mature sex. I look at it as a mature, immature problem a lot. I look at these addictions, these sex addictions and porn addictions, as a developmental problem. It's sort of like a regressed, childlike way to meet our sexual needs versus dealing with a partner who may reject us, who we have to have courage, we have to grow up, we have to think of their needs as well as ours. You know, it's a two-way street versus I'm going to go do my thing in the corner here with the video, with the computer, whatever. And I'm not against porn. I'm not one of those anti-porn people. I'm anti anything that makes the relationship, blocks relationship fulfillment. And when you're addicted to alcohol, cocaine, food, even sex, it blocks the potential because you're kind of developmentally, it's sort of like a lazy person's way to have pleasure without all the wonderful connection of two adults. So, and here's the other thing, it's a secret. It's a secret, just like infidelity. I say infidelity is different than porn, in that porn that doesn't involve another person, a real life person in chat rooms or whatever, when it's just you and the video or you and the picture, it's porn. It's not to me infidelity,
right?
But it's still a secret. And secrets kill relationships if they go on for too long and you're hiding. And it creates this parent-child pattern in the relationship where the person's cheating, usually it's the man in this case, is like a little boy not wanting to get in trouble by mommy, and it doesn't make for a good relationship. So porn has several problems to it like that versus you know, going up to a partner and say, you know what, you've been out of commission for a while, whether it's this and this, I'm kind of horny, I'm going to go and just masturbate. I hope you're okay with that. That's the kind of relationships that I would like to see. And I know that doesn't happen a whole lot, but we have to educate ourselves on that as well. You know, but I'd rather people say that and use the porn as a little cherry on top rather than, like this person you described, that's their sex life.
Right. Or maybe they could go to their partner and say, I'd like to have sex with you. Is that a possibility? Or, you know, and if it's not, then maybe I'll step over here in the other room. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think part of the problem is we've been brainwashed to not be honest, to hide the things about us. I talk a lot about this. I talk about the monogamish relationship.
Yeah.
Because monogamy as we know it isn't working too well. That's why I'm so busy with divorce proofing and infidelity, right?
So that's why we're busy.
And you're busy, right? So maybe we got to look at the institution of marriage and take a step back and go, okay, swinging and open relationships, they don't work for most people, only for a very few. And I'm not against it for those people, but it doesn't work. Monogamy, as we know, it doesn't work. Cheating and hiding is terrible. So what do we do? Maybe we need to learn how to be more open about the different parts of us and be creative with our partner and be open. That's all. Again, I train my other therapists on this and how to help couples maybe gradually develop the muscle so that there's more openness and transparency, so that I could say to my wife, we were married 34 years yesterday, by the way.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Well, 3 years ago, I gave a talk to a bunch of therapists and my wife was in the audience and I told her, look, when I talk, it's on eroticism in marriage. I'm going to warn you, you never know what comes out of my mouth. I might talk about us. I can't predict. She goes, oh boy. So at some point I said, look, there's my wife. I've been married 31 years to her and I am totally attracted to her. I would love to have sex with another woman. I got to tell you right now, I would love to have sex with another woman. And they looked at me and then they looked at her and me and her. And then she goes, of course he wants to. He hasn't had sex with anyone but me for 32 years, as far as I know. And you know, it's funny. But it's like, why can't we talk about these things? Of course I would. I'm not going to do it. Just doesn't work in this universe. Maybe in some parallel universe it would, but not in mine. But sure. And to have that openness and for her to be accepting of it is kind of a turn on. So that's what I try to help couples. And I understand not everyone's going to just jump right into that, but I think
the old expression, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't read the menu.
Yeah, that's right. I love it, Rebecca.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you kind of touched a little bit on how to approach these conversations, but is there anything more you would say about that?
This conversation about like
how to approach conversations with your spouse about how to spice things up or.
Oh, you know. Great. Yeah. Well, again, I think what we want to do is be loving and sensitive to the other person. You know, let's say you have a couple who have had a very little bit of intimate life for a long time. Maybe they're on the verge of divorce. Maybe they're not, but they really haven't. What you want to do is not make the other person wrong and not come from judgment. That's the most important thing. And what you do then is you just say, okay, I want to tell you what I need. What I need is I miss you. I long for you. You're beautiful to me, you know, if it's the man. The wife would say, you know, I find you attractive. I love being with you. I respect everything about you. I appreciate you, but I can't go on this way. And let's see what we could do about it. Let's take a few steps. Let's just take a few steps and see what we could do. And then you would ask, could we just, you know, wherever the couple's at, if they haven't touched, like this one couple that hadn't touched in 7 years, they need to just hold each other. You know, they by the way, that couple, we discovered it took a while, actually. She didn't know why she didn't want to touch her husband. He was sober for 7 years off of alcohol. What we finally discovered, I did some hypnosis with her, actually to help her get in touch with it. But she recognized that The last time they made love when he was drunk, she had done some things he asked that she didn't want to do. And she said, you know, I remember now, I made a decision. I will never let myself feel submissive again. My dad was domineering. He didn't molest me, but he's very domineering. My husband, I was too accommodating. I was too adapting. And I made a decision right then and there. I will never do this again. Then he got sober. And she didn't know that was the operating belief. Right. So she had to learn how to set boundaries and know that she could actually have a sense of self and still touch. And so what I'm saying is, the long-winded answer to that question is, you want to be in touch with what holds us back, what holds you back, and how can we take little baby steps to preserve what you want, but not at the expense of our intimacy life. So...
You know, so that sort of makes me think, I know your book, Sex, Love, and Karaoke, has 52 tips for igniting your love life. So what could you give us a few tips that, you know, for our listeners, something maybe to try out tonight?
Okay. Wow, let's think. I haven't looked at my book in years. Yeah, tonight. No, this is one thing I would tell you to do. Think about how you typically are and act your opposite. See, part of the thing is we identify with our so-called personalities. So let's say you tend to be a taker. Let's say you're a taker. You're one of these people that have no problem asking for what you want. You want to tonight think about how can I I'm going to ask the question, what can I give to my partner? And if you don't know the answer, ask your partner that. So you need to kind of identify, how am I in terms of the polarity of giving and taking? If I tend to be a giver, maybe I need to think about what I want. And you say, hey, you know what you could do for me tonight? Do me a favor. Now, that puts us out of our comfort zone. But act your opposite. So that's one tip, is to act your opposite.
I like that one.
Yeah, so act your opposite.
So we have sort of like the George Costanza, do the opposite.
I love that episode is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, there you go.
And it worked for him.
It did. He got the job at the Yankees.
Yep.
So we only have a couple seconds here, but I wanted to get this last question in because it's really, really important. So for our viewer or our listeners, those who are viewing or listening, who are already divorced or separated, what advice can you give them for getting naked with someone for the first time after they've been with one person for a long time?
That's a very good question. You know, the first thing is that you want to go slowly. And, you know, honestly, since I'm talking to this population, there's something I heard once that stuck with me. And I know that not all women go with it, but I think it's a good idea. It's called the 3 C's. And this is what I heard. It's from another therapist that's pretty well known in this area. And she said that women shouldn't open up any aperture, whether it's their mouth, their vagina, or their anus. I know I'm blunt, but unless they have commitment, consistency, and caring. Commitment could be exclusivity, consistency, you know, over some frequency of dating, and caring, that you get the sense that you're not here just to have my body, you really care about me. That doesn't mean they can't make out. That means they can't do other things. That was the first quick answer to that. And I think that really makes sense, because I understand how that all works, that it's hard for a woman sometimes to open up and then open up a heart, and then maybe it's too soon. So you want to go slow. And the other thing is to just feel beautiful. Affirm how wonderful and beautiful you are, that when the time is right and you want to be naked, don't get hypercritical. Focus on all the wonderful things about you and flaunt it.
Or you know, handsome if you're a man or whatever.
Or handsome if you're a man. You know, I'm focusing on the women on this.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're a man, look, we don't have to be perfect. Don't hide. Don't listen to your inner critic is what I want to say. Your inner critic is not the wisest part of you. And actually, if you come from your confidence, that's very attractive.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. Those are wonderful tips for our listeners, Todd. And thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And, you know, to paraphrase your tagline, which I love, helping make the world safe for love.
And thank you also. And I know your books are available on Amazon, Todd, and as well as your website, yes. Which we mentioned is yes. toddkrieger.com, which I'll spell out again as toddkrieger.com. And you also have an upcoming couples retreat. Would you like to yes. share a little bit about that with our listeners?
Yes. Yeah, I'm very excited about it because I'm putting everything I got in me into this retreat. It's going to be at the end of October. It's going to be at the Huntington Beach Hyatt Resort. So it's really beautiful. People come in Friday night to Sunday. And that's the center of this program. I'm actually going to see people before and after individually. They got a whole bunch of my products and everything. But the weekend is all about reaching your relationship potential, learning how to communicate effectively, developing the emotional muscle to stay present even when tough conversations come up, rekindling passion, feeling more and more alive with each other. It just goes on and on. And so I'm going to have a few special guests help you get in touch with what's going on in your body, so that you're not so much in your heads. This is not just for the men, but especially for the men. And it's going to be wonderful. And it's going to be a little bit indulgent too. So it's going to be work. And I'm going to ask a lot of you. But if you're ready, if you're a couple that's hearing this, and you are ready to really go for it, really want to go for it, this program is very important. And they should just contact me. You know, todd@toddkrieger.com, as you've spelled, or my office number, 714-848-2288. And we could have a conversation about it. It's an investment of time and it's an investment of some money, but it is life changing. And it's going to be wonderful.
Sounds like a great opportunity. Thank you again, Todd.
Thank you.
You're right. And I do have that other, my program that is a nice step up from, you know, Divorce Proof Your Marriage. And that's an audio visual program that is in hand with what you guys do. And that you can find on my website as well. Or you could just put in toddkrieger.com/divorce-proof. And that's an audio visual program. It's going to have me, gives you exercises, and it just goes from step to step in terms of communication, romance, passion, breaking free from old patterns from maybe your dysfunctional family, so you're freed up to be all of you.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce Podcast.
Thank you very much.
I'm Rebecca Zung.
You're welcome.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, a step-by-step divorce guide to achieving emotional, physical, and spiritual freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.